Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Most of the news from Afghanistan is bad. Political corruption, fraudulent elections, the daily drumbeat of war. Our next guests have been on the battlefield, but they believe there's potential for something positive in Afghanistan's private sector. They say it can be an engine for jobs, goods, services, taxes in this country that relies more on foreign aid than any other in the world. And more important, they say the private sector can create a class of people with a vested interest in stability and order. Well, we want to hear from them today. Eric Malmstrom is a former Army officer who served in Afghanistan. Jake Cusack is a former Marine Corps officer who served in Iraq. They're both now in a joint graduate program at Harvard's Kennedy and Business Schools. They traveled to Afghanistan this summer. By the way, their observations are in an article for the think tank, the Center for a New American Security. You can read it, as well as see some of the pictures they took on their trip at hereandnow.org. As they join us in the studio, Eric, you're Army.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Jake, Marine.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to you as well. And is it okay for me to refer to you by your first names?
Absolutely.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's start with you, Eric. Make your case. I mean, we don't think of Afghanistan as a country that has, you know, is manufacturing or producing things. So make your case, first of all, for why you think there's positive news here.
The positive case comes from spending almost a year and a half in 2006, 2007 as an Army officer in the eastern part of the country. And then going back this past summer and spending time with a number of small, medium-sized enterprises and people involved in the economic development effort and feeling like there's potential all over the place and beyond the obvious areas such as agriculture and mining, where much of the international attention has been focused, and looking at other areas like manufacturing, looking at services, including telecoms, which have already demonstrated a lot of success within the Afghan market. And you also see a vibrant entrepreneurial spirit amongst Afghans who, over the past 30 years, have had to demonstrate a kind of survival mechanism to make it through all the instability that they've had. And that's forced them to look at ways of creating money because they can't rely on the government or anyone else to really do that for them.
Well, Jake, just pick up, though, on something Eric just said. These are people who have been fiercely independent because they've had to be. So how do you go from that to you must now pay taxes to your government, a government which many people don't trust?
The answer is not to funnel all of the aid through the government and think that government can fill all these functions that we typically, or in America, we would look to the private sector for, which is often the way it is now in terms of a lot of the funds being channeled through the Afghan government, rather than allowing the private sector to play a role in producing goods and services for the Afghan people.
Well, it sounds as if you got some sense of how the government is viewed. You walked through Kandahar with the president's brother, who's been viewed as someone who's part of the corruption. What was that like?
Not only did I get to spend a little bit of time with Mahmoud Karzai and not really to look that much into his corruption and dealings like that, but to be able to see in a place like Kandahar, notorious for its insecurity, that business was still functioning. Even in Kandahar, I was able to visit with a beverage company that was making a very popular Coca-Cola-type product in Kandahar, with a box manufacturer, with a raisin producer. So all these companies still functioning in an environment which from the West I think we perceive as almost a near wasteland.
Well, okay, so you met the man who grows the raisins and the soda bottler. But there you are with the president's brother. Did you get a sense that bribes have to be paid? Did you get a sense of what lubricates business now in Afghanistan and what those problems might be?
I think certainly for the businesses that are in any way high profile or noticed or recognized for having substantial income, they have to have powerful allies, both in the government and depending on their location, in the insurgency. And so they do have to pay off people in order to get their goods through customs, in order to be confident that their business is not going to be taken, that they're not going to be taxed heavily, that they're not going to be pushed out of business by a regulation that might be made up by a government official. For some of the more low-profile businesses that are really providing services and goods to a smaller community, they're able to continue to exist and just stay at an arm's length from the government and sometimes the insurgency as well.
Well, Eric, Jake talked about how right now it's foreign aid that's lubricating this country. In fact, you write that Afghanistan is donor drunk. What does that mean, and how does that impact the private sector?
Some of the things that we saw were many Afghans kind of scheming the system to try to get aid money, doing things that they knew would be able to attract foreign dollars, even when they knew that the projects were in many cases bogus.
The Afghan businesses were losing their talent to international firms, and we found that Afghans themselves were only interested in learning English and information technology skills, which they thought could land them those kind of jobs at Western firms, but not interested in learning accounting, business skills, agriculture skills that are actually vital to a sustainable Afghan economy.
Well, but what are you saying? I mean, it sounds like the obvious consequence of your criticism would be someone would say, well, let's cut out the aid.
It is not about cutting out the aid. What we need to do is, one, look at how much aid the system is capable of absorbing at a given time, and not fooling ourselves into thinking that we can just buy development and creating an Afghan economy by throwing more aid at the country. And I think that in many cases, the private sector is crowded out by foreign money that funds a bogus project. And so I think that we just need to, one, look at the volume of aid, two, look at how it's being used, and realistically understanding that, you know, there's only so much aid that the system can absorb, and two, looking at the most productive uses of that aid.
Yeah. Well, Jake, meantime, you write about companies that are thriving, including the motorcycle company. Here it is, the Zarang Motorcycle Company, a family business. Why are they successful?
Zarang Motorcycle Company was a really interesting company to see because it was located in western Afghanistan in Herat. It was one of the first companies that I spent a couple days with. And it really sort of changed my expectations of what Afghan companies are capable of what Afghans with nothing beyond a high school education are capable of. And here was a company that had identified a market for motorcycles, first began importing them from China, then decided they would start assembling their own three-wheeled rickshaws that could be used for transports of goods and people. And so, lacking the knowledge of how to assemble these motorcycles, they sent one of the siblings to China, where he filmed the assembly process. He came back, taught a group of local mechanics how to begin assembling these products. And here's a company that grew from 15 employees in 2005 to over 200 in 2010, with branches across the country. And in most of the cities that I went to in Afghanistan, I would see these motorcycles all over the roads. And they had a marketing strategy that was more sophisticated than you'd expect for Afghanistan, perhaps. They had promotional calendars, they had billboards, they had television ads. All of these things, I think, are far away from our perception of Afghanistan as a place where people are scraping by to make a subsistence living.
We're taking a look at Afghanistan's private sector economy with Eric Malmstrom, a former Army officer who served in Afghanistan, and Jake Cusack, a former Marine Corps officer who served in Iraq. Together, the now Harvard grad students visited Afghanistan this summer as civilians, growing beards, dressing as Pashtuns so they could blend in and speak with business owners. They came back with an optimistic report about the country's private sector. You can read it at hereandnow.org. But, Eric, I want to address something. You and Jake are both military men, as we said, but now you're saying the focus has to be on economic development. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, as a soldier, you invested a lot in Afghanistan. You had a rough ride there. You're nodding yes.
Yeah, so I was in a very unstable part of the eastern part of the country. Three of my guys were killed. My commander was killed. We fought a lot, and the unit that followed mine fought even more and has had one of the highest casualty rates of any U.S. military unit since Vietnam. Mm. And certainly much of what we did was military in nature. But really, day to day, what I spent most of my time on and what I felt was the key to our success was developing a positive relationship with the local villagers, with the different levels of government. And the key component to building a strong relationship was improving their quality of life. Many junior officers, including myself, are involved in managing development projects and trying to figure out ways of spurring betterment within these very underdeveloped, poor areas of the country. And to go in there and think that by solving security problems, you've solved the situation there is just completely off the mark. And really, the long-term gains come from economic development, diplomacy, and other softer skills that the military is working on. And so we are spending much of our time on that, and I think we're realizing many of our gains. In the places where we've done a good job at that, I think you've seen much more progress than you've seen in places where we're just fighting all the time.
Is that sort of like saying, though? I mean, this sort of veering into a place I wasn't sure we were going to go, but is that sort of like saying that those friends of yours who died for naught, that it was the wrong approach.
So I'm not saying that at all. I think that every person who puts on a uniform understands that you're going to be serving your country, and that's what drives many and most people into military service, and particularly in frontline infantry units, which both Jake and I were in. So I'm absolutely not saying that my soldiers or any other soldiers in Afghanistan or Iraq died in vain.
What's it like to go back, though, to a country where, you know, people died and you were, I'm sure, sweating it a lot, and now you're walking around in Pashtun clothes trying to fix the economy?
It's very surreal. I mean, to go from being deployed in uniform all the time around your fellow soldiers to then just flying on a commercial plane into Kabul, getting out of the airport in a taxi cab, staying at a hotel, and then traveling around the country independently. It took some getting used to, but I think my main takeaway was just a sense of optimism that I didn't have when I left my military deployment.
Jake, your thoughts on going back as a former soldier now. As you said, you're in Pashtun, your outfit's growing a beard. What was it like for you?
Eric and I met at business school, and it was interesting because we'd come there for similar reasons. My experience in Iraq from 2005 to 2008, which was a time which saw tremendous violence in Iraq and then eventually a more stable kind of peace being reached. And my experience was that initially, in my first deployment, I was very much involved in combat operations. I was a sniper platoon commander, and we were very successful on the tactical level. But what I saw over the course of all my time in Iraq is that the gains that we achieved through the exercise of military skill were often insignificant. But the gains that were achieved through political or economic shifts could change the whole course of the war. And I think you saw that in Al Anbar, which eventually became allied, essentially, to the National Government of Iraq and to the U.S. in working against Al-Qaeda in Iraq and bringing Al Anbar, historically the most violent province of the country, to become one of the most peaceful provinces of the country.
This was the awakening.
The awakening, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then to go to Afghanistan and spend a couple months there, living with, spending time with Afghan entrepreneurs and businessmen, was a great mindset change, was a great shift. It was much more uplifting than any of the raids that I'd done in Iraq, even the most successful ones where we captured a number three high-value individual, one of the most wanted people in the country. It was so much more uplifting, as Eric said, to spend time with businessmen who were optimistic about the future, who were investing in the future, and who were actually improving the quality of life for people around them. And that's not to say that all the businesses in Afghanistan are good for their country. There's certainly corrupt businesses, and there's businesses that are taking advantage of all the international money and manipulating the system and getting ill-gotten gains. But there's also businesses that are showing a way for the Afghan people to have a real future.
Tell me one thing I'm going to want to buy from Afghanistan.
One thing you can buy right now is the Afghan carpets are great. Afghanistan's a great tradition of carpets. The pomegranates down by Kandahar are also great. There's work on pomegranate juicing plants, so look for pomegranate juice.
We haven't touched on one thing, the poppy crop. How do you think that ends?
The great thing for the farmer about growing poppy is that he produces this and then somebody comes up and picks up this very transportable good from his doorstep and gives him cash right there at the moment. Now, if he makes a decision instead to grow pomegranates, he'll have to package that up himself, bring it on very insecure roads to a market that may or may not be open, and along the way on those roads, he may be accosted by insurgents, he may be accosted by the government, asked for a bribe. So you can see that the incentives are not the same for growing opium as they are for pomegranates, but I think we can learn something from the success of opium in Afghanistan and say, what is it about that business model, so to speak, that we could use to produce legitimate agricultural goods?
Go pick up the pomegranates is what I'm hearing. That's former Marine Officer Jake Cusack. We've also been speaking with former Army Officer Eric Malmstrom. Both are now Harvard grad students. They just visited Afghanistan to study the country's private sector. You can read the report at hereandnow.org. Eric, Jake, thanks so much for coming in, and best to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.